Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
All righty, hour number two of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. March Madness is in the books. What a sensational Final Four it was. Florida is the last team standing after taking care of Houston last night. Another remarkable comeback by the Gators as they take down the Cougars by a final score in San Antonio. Florida 65, Houston 63. Someone that was there, ACC Network analyst, that's Joel Berry II, who was the most outstanding player from the Tar Heels' run in the Final Four to win a championship back in 2017, is kind enough to join us once again on the show. Joel, appreciate the time. How you been?
Yeah, thanks, man. It was an awesome Final Four. I really enjoyed myself. Jam-packed with a lot of fun. So glad I was able to be in attendance, but I'm doing well after that.
Well, let me take you back to 2017. You've had this moment in college where you wake up and you know that your team just won it all. What is that like, remembering what happened all those years ago now in 2017 when you guys beat Gonzaga? The next day when you wake up, just what do you remember from it?
It's an unbelievable feeling. You actually kind of don't sleep because you're up texting and calling and
partying.
All your friends, family. Yeah, probably a little partying. For sure. But it's such a great time. I just remember, just the feeling of, especially my year, because we made it the year before, and just coming back to get to that pinnacle. You don't often get a chance to do that as a player. So when I did that, it was just very special. But I think the special moment is when you get back to your city, your town, where you have all the people who have been supporting you through all the roller coasters of the season. That's when it's really special being able to celebrate it with them.
But what was the night like? You guys win, right? You finish up the media, you're celebrating with friends and family. Any good stories from the celebration that night?
There's a lot of details that I got to leave out, but long story short, we enjoyed ourselves quite a bit. It was a great night. You know, first off, we saw our families, because they've been there with us every step of the way. We enjoyed ourselves in Arizona. So it's a special place for me and my teammates.
Yeah. You know, knowing coach Roy Williams a bit, I saw him at the Final Four with the big jar of popcorn, a box of popcorn. You guys probably just had popcorn and soda that night, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's all we had, you know.
you talked about the redemption. So we all know what happened the year before. Jenkins at the buzzer. You guys, a lot of you come back. You know, when that moment happened up against Villanova, to them what it turned into, you know, obviously you wanted to win the first one, but how much sweeter was it after going through the ultimate heartbreak right at the buzzer?
Yeah, I mean, obviously no one wants those pains, but it was part of what propelled us to get back to that moment. And like I said, teams don't often do that. But the way that we were able to stay with that goal in mind throughout the year, we just tried to do that each and every game. Earlier that year, we won the Maui, And, you know, we just had that mindset of like, we're here for business now. The year before, it was, you know, deer in headlights, eyes wide open with all the stuff that you do at the Final Four. When we walked in to Phoenix, we were straight business, strictly business. We knew how everything operated, and we were able to just keep our mind on that, on the goal that we were there for. So it's bittersweet to even have the chance to get back, because after this Final Four, the way that I feel now from my seat, the stress is just through the roof. And I'm sweating, and I don't even have a dog in the fight. So I can only imagine, you know, how my parents, how the fans felt during that time. So it's just unbelievable to see, you know, the hard work and how hard it is to actually conquer and win a national championship.
Joel Berry the second here with us. I was there Saturday, and I couldn't believe walking out of that building what I saw. Like, nothing against Florida and Houston. It was a really good national championship game. But I will always remember this NCAA tournament with Duke being up 6 with 34 seconds to go. And I am still speechless in trying to explain how that one did go down, Joel.
I'm speechless as well. I think a lot of people after that game, it was almost difficult to talk about, because you just don't know how it happened. Obviously, we know how it happened, but it's just like up six with 33 seconds left. I mean, that's, you know, other team, they're getting up out of their seats, heading to the parking lot to drive off.
And usually there's like a signature moment. There's still right. No signature moment from that. Like, I walked out there. I'm not even a Duke fan. I'm not a Cougars fan. I was just there. I'm like, what the heck did I just watch?
It was ugly. It wasn't pretty. It was just like one of those things where in the moment, it was like, hold on, I think this is actually happening. But it just wasn't pretty. And it was shocking. You know, as a Carolina fan, you know, obviously I'm like,
yes, yes, yes.
Yes, yes, yes. But as a player and knowing how special it is being in that moment, I felt bad for them because they had the game in their hands. And everything was going their way. They had the 1-1. They had the violation out of bounds. It's like all the stars were aligning, and they still lost the game. It was just very shocking.
Now, you have an interesting perspective on this, because like we were talking about, you guys lose after the Marcus Paige acrobatic shot. You guys lose at the buzzer in a championship game. For Duke, they controlled most of the game, looked like they were going to go to a championship game, and they lose in the final 30-something seconds. The player perspective of it, how long did it kind of take you to just get back to feeling normal after the devastation that occurred for you in 2016?
Yeah, it's really hard, because like all players do, I mean, even before the game, you're trying to process all these scenarios, everything that's going on. So it's the same way after the game. You're trying to think about everything that went down, and you're thinking what could change, you know? And I think it's even harder when you look at the fact that, like, we lost on the last second shot and the game was tied. There's nothing that you can really do in that moment. It's just better offense than defense.
Yeah.
But when you look at how Duke did it, they had all the opportunities. So I feel like it's even harder in that moment, because you had the game in your hand and you beat yourself. And I just think that's even harder to deal with than losing on the last second shot.
Now, let me preface it. It's a totally different situation. You guys, a lot of you came back. You won the championship the next year. Cooper Flagg is going to be the first pick of the draft. Could you see any chance, maybe a slim chance, that he says, you know, I'm so disgusted what happened in the Final Four with the way the NIL money is, I'll take a fat contract and come on back and try to right this wrong?
I just think there's too much money on the table. You know, he reclassified. And I just don't see a scenario. Obviously there could be, but I just don't think it would be a situation that's beneficial for him. And I know he probably wants to win a national championship. But I just think the talent that he has and what's on the table, you have to go. And I think he's going to be great at the next level, but if he does come back, hey, college basketball, get ready, because he's coming back to get a national championship, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. Joel Berry II here with us. All righty, we talk about Houston finding a way to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat on Saturday. Then last night, they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. What the heck happened on that final sequence? In the moment, I'm screaming, go, 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 go. I appreciate the aggressive nature of trying to just go get a three at the buzzer, but what a disaster that was in the final 19 seconds. Break it down after watching it again.
Yeah, First off, the possession didn't get off to a great start. Florida did a great job of just blowing up everything and keeping Houston out on the perimeter. And then all of a sudden you see Sharp get open. And I look at Walter Clayton Jr. and he's just like, he's all the way down by the block when Sharp gets the ball. So I'm like, man, this is a great opportunity. It was almost like, it's sort of like elevator doors, but it wasn't. But Sharp was wide open. And the way that Clayton closed that space, man, to get out there to contest, I mean, that was spectacular. And then Sharp just couldn't get it off. And one of the things that I noticed, too, is both of their guards have very slow releases. Or not slow releases, but low release. So he's shooting from his chest. And I think that's what gave Walter Clayton Jr. the opportunity to be able to get out there and contest. But that's what was so special to me, was him being able to close that space and get a hand up.
How about the strategy? Did you think it was right to try to draw up a play, even though it didn't work, and just go for the win right at the buzzer? Would you like to have seen them gone a little bit earlier?
I always like to go a little bit earlier because you give yourself an opportunity to get an offensive rebound. And I feel like with Kelvin Sampson knowing his team, you would think you have a chance, because a lot of times that's how they generate their offense. They really don't. Sometimes it just looks like they want to get the ball up on the rim and then go get an offensive rebound. So if it was me, knowing my team has the possibility of being able to get an offensive rebound, I'm going early so that we can muck it up a little bit just in case we don't knock down a shot. So I just think they spent too much time with all the different actions before. Just get into a ball screen and go make a play.
And the other thing is, too, I know we were all focusing throughout the majority of the game, what's going on with Walter Clayton Jr.? He's not coming alive. We thought he was going to be sensational. He's been the most entertaining player in the NCAA tournament. Well, Houston didn't shoot the ball well either. So just to rely on that three right at the buzzer by design, that was questionable. And in the moment, like I told you, I'm sitting there on my couch and I had money on Florida, to be clear. I had the Gators on the money line and I'm screaming, you got to go. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. All that action at the beginning kind of threw me off because it was wasted time. They didn't do anything, and Florida was with them every step of the way. So I just don't – LJ Cryer was about the only one that had consistent scoring throughout the game. I would have just put him in a ball screen, and then let's just see what happened from there. So I'm like you, it was just a lot of wasted time.
Here's the other thing, Joel Berry II. On the flip side, Florida, you know this. Whenever your team wins most of the time a championship, you win a game, you survive and you advance in a game that you probably could have lost. We saw three games in this tournament. UConn, they should have lost. Texas Tech, they should have lost. And let's be honest, they should have lost last night to Houston. The resiliency of this Gators team and how they just find a way is so remarkable, and that's all I'll remember them.
Yeah, it's very remarkable because it's hard to do in the NCAA tournament game, especially when it's sort of like the momentum isn't there. But they just find a way. But I think it's a testament to their poise and how composed they are. And it has to do with Walter Clayton Jr. Look, I look at Walter Clayton, by far has way more skill than I. But when I look at him and his mentality, he has a straight poker face the whole game. And then all of a sudden, he just comes out and steps up in the big moments. He reminds me of myself in that way because I had a poker face. And really, the only time I showed emotion was when I know we were getting ready to win the game. But I think his team embodied that. It permeated throughout the team. And I listened to Thomas Houck. He said, even when we were down 12, no one was stressed. So I just think your point guard, having that mentality keeps the team that way.
You know, it's interesting. As we head to the Final Four, you know, everyone was talking about Bruce Pearl and Kelvin Sampson, right? One of those guys, they're deserving of finally getting a championship. A lot of love clearly shown and thrown the way to John Shire, and they had an epic collapse on Saturday. Todd Golden wasn't really getting talked about a lot nationally. How should people view him as a coach? And is this like a long run coming at Florida? Do you think maybe he eventually follows Billy Donovan or like what Brad Stevens did, even though Brad didn't win a championship and maybe he has some NBA interest?
Yeah, I don't know why he wasn't being talked about. I mean, this team was very, very spectacular. And the way he put it together is what caught my eye. I think, you know, just being able to go out and last year, you know, he doesn't have the size and the rebounding in the bigs because of how the game was going. And he said, you know what? Scratch that. I'm going to get me some mobile bigs. I'm going to get guys that like to fight in the post. And I just really thought that was the difference maker. And the makeup of this team, being able to, yeah, Walter Clayton Jr. got all the, you know, all of the rap, but the way that this team was made up, it was just so balanced that even when Walter Clayton Jr. isn't having a great game, they still have other pieces to the pie. So I don't know why he hasn't been talked about. I think he's going to be one of the greats. Look, I was talking to someone about it the other day. Mike Krzyzewski coached 40 years and only had 5 championships. It is freaking hard to win a national championship. This guy has done it at 39, and I'm sure this won't be his last.
I got to ask you this before we let you run. I know we talked about this when Roy Williams joined us, and he came out there and emphatically defended Hubert Davis. Tar Heels, even though a lot of people didn't think they should have got into the tournament, they did. They win that first 4 game, and then they lose to Ole Miss. Where are you at on Hubert Davis? And how do you kind of view his tenure so far as the head coach at UNC? You know him very well.
Yeah, well, it's just human nature to always, you know, sort of focus on the negative, focus on what's not working. But let's put a spin on it. Let's think about the positive. You got a coach who in his first year made it to the national championship. And I hate seeing on the screen last night about the deficits and how teams came back, because obviously Carolina was at the top up by 16 and end up losing the game. So you're 16 points, you know, from winning, or 20 minutes from winning that game. You win. He's been the coach of the year. He's won the regular season. I just think it's important that there needs to be some consistency. It doesn't need to go from number one to being unranked and not even making the NCAA tournament. But to me, he has the pieces. He has the intangibles of a great coach. I just think being able to operate in this environment, especially with the tradition that Carolina has, you kind of have to sort of throw that out of the window and adapt to what's going on. So I think once that gets figured out, I think they'll be fine. But if you had me to put Coach Davis at whatever school I was at, I would be totally fine with him, because I've seen the success that he's had.
He's Joel Berry, the second most outstanding player for the 2017 Final Four, now doing a kick-ass job with the ACC Network. Joel, appreciate you carving out some time for us today.
Always, man. I appreciate you having me.
You got it. There he is, Joel Berry, one of the best college basketball analysts in the country, right there with us on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Will Deshaun Watson ever play again in the NFL? We'll talk about that next. Also, Brian Geltzeiler from SiriusXM NBA Radio will try to make some sense of the Denver Nuggets situation with Michael Malone getting fired and Calvin Booth getting fired with 3 games remaining in the regular season.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. You know, Deshaun Watson has not played like a great quarterback since 2020. So he was out of football in 2021, then got suspended and played the last six games of 2022, got hurt in 2023, and then got hurt in 2024. Now, I feel like a lot of people forget this. He ruptured his Achilles tendon back in week 7 and then re-ruptured it and needed another surgery back in early January. So this idea of Deshaun Watson coming on back this year, first off, he stinks now. He is no longer, forget about a great quarterback, a good quarterback, forget about an average quarterback. But he has now had a litany of injuries. And it has been since 2020, that's 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024. So four NFL seasons since we've seen him be anything that resembles a top 7 or 8 quarterback in the NFL like he did in 2020. Now, like, when I say I don't fault the Browns for bringing in Deshaun Watson, let me be clear. What Deshaun Watson was accused of was despicable. It was deplorable. The Deshaun Watson that we thought we knew clearly wasn't the same guy that we thought we knew when he was at Clemson. But how many times has it happened in this league, whether you're the team to do it or somebody else will, and I'm not saying that makes it right, but a player is not in a jail cell. A player has a suspension. As long as he serves that suspension, he's going to be eligible to play. So if Cleveland didn't make the trade for him, there were other teams that were interested in getting Deshaun Watson. So Cleveland took it to the level, and maybe they had to put some lipstick on a pig where they said, okay, we got to give you a fully guaranteed contract for you to come to Cleveland. But at the time, if you would have just told me, if you could separate the off-the-field incidents, which it's tough to do, and I acknowledge that, and if you just looked at Deshaun Watson, the football player, would you give up that draft capital for Deshaun Watson? I would have absolutely have said yes, right? If you just take it from a football matter, I thought he was worth it. And I thought Cleveland should have rolled the dice. But since getting to Cleveland, he has been a walking injury, and he's also been a bad quarterback. So ESPN came out with this article examining the future of Deshaun Watson. I don't think there is a future for Deshaun Watson. He's got 2 years left on this contract. I highly doubt he plays this year. Even if he does play this year, he's not going to be ready for the start of the season. The Cleveland Browns have to address their future at the quarterback position, and I don't think Kenny Pickett is going to be their long-term answer. I know, hot take of the day. You have the second overall pick in the draft, so I would take Shedeur Sanders. I don't think they're going to take Shedeur Sanders, but it's still possible. And even if you don't take Shedeur Sanders, you can't bank on Deshaun Watson. So it's like, okay, are you going to go make a move for Kirk Cousins? But, you know, when you look at Deshaun Watson, you have to say this, and this goes for any player with controversy. Are you willing to take on the deservedly so public criticism for the potential success on the football field, right? Is the juice worth the squeeze here? That's what you have to ask yourself. And at the time, the Cleveland Browns clearly thought it was. But now, not only the Cleveland Browns know that he's not worth it, and you had Jimmy Haslam come out, and it was like so tone-deaf too by Jimmy Haslam. Like, I appreciate him saying something, but we've known now for the last year and a half, 2 years, you know, anyone outside of Deshaun Watson's agent and his dopey quarterback coach, if we're being honest, who likes to try to tell us that Deshaun Watson's this great quarterback and we still don't know what we're talking about. And this is coming from someone that was, emphasize the word, was a Deshaun Watson fan. This was coming from someone that was screaming at the NFL draft in Philadelphia, how dare the Chicago Bears take Mitch Trubisky over Deshaun Watson, right? So I've been a fan of Deshaun Watson, the football player. But with what has gone on off the field, and now there's been no success on the field, if you're the Cleveland Browns, you just want this to end. And your owner coming on out and saying, hey, we tried, we got this one wrong, is basically admitting publicly, even without saying that Deshaun's never going to play a snap again for the Cleveland Browns, that he's not going to play a snap again, a meaningful snap again for the Cleveland Browns. Like, could he be quarterback two, holding a clipboard, and the quarterback gets hurt, or the quarterback has five interceptions, you say, okay, throw Deshaun Watson to the wolves? Yeah, I guess he could say that. But I'll take it a step further. I don't think Deshaun Watson plays ever again in the NFL. Because it's one thing, even with after all the accusations, for him to get the big contract, for him to require a team like the Browns to give up a bevy of picks. But he turns 30 by the first or second week of the NFL season. He has a birthday in early September. So by the second week of the NFL season, he's 30. And this is not someone that, right, was great last year and then got hurt. This is someone that didn't play in 2021, and then since coming back and playing in 2022, 2023, 2024, he either has sucked or he's been hurt. And now he's had two ruptured Achilles from week 7 of this year to January, right, early January of 2025. He's had two surgeries. So his body's broken, his confidence is broken, and his play is broken. So if you're a team, let's say if Cleveland releases him or the contract runs its course, that's the other thing. They could just let the contract have him rot and allow the contract to run its course. Then you go from him not being great since 2020 to then that potentially be through the 2026 season. So inevitably, I do think they move on from him. He won't play another meaningful snap with the Browns. But if you're another team out there with all the distractions he brings in and with there being no more of a chance that this guy's going to be a great quarterback, or even a good quarterback, or even a serviceable quarterback, I don't see why the other 31 teams, and not all the other 31 teams need a quarterback, why in their right mind they would even bring in Deshaun Watson, forget to be a starter, to even be a backup. And right, like, he could be a fine backup in this league, but with all that comes with Deshaun Watson, the juice is clearly no longer worth the squeeze. Samter, let me ask you this, because you sent me this article from ESPN on Deshaun Watson. Just what kind of was your reaction, and what do you think about the football future for Deshaun Watson?
It's a question I hadn't really thought about. It felt like Deshaun Watson was struggling. He's hurt, but once he comes back, this was earlier in the offseason, once he comes back, he's the Browns quarterback. Now it's clear the Browns are moving on.
Oh, they're done with him.
Right, they're done. But early in the offseason, or even like at the end of the season, it just felt like, you know, okay, he'll come back whenever he's healthy, and he'll be the Browns quarterback,
oh,
whatever they do.
You felt that way?
In the middle and the end of the season, yes. It wasn't until the draft process started where it just became clear and evident that the Browns were not going to stay with Deshaun Watson. What they were going to do with him and his money,
just real quickly,
knows?
I would disagree with that, because I went into last season, this is finally put up or shut up time. Like, he gets to Cleveland in 2021. You couldn't really judge him because he sat out the first 10 games. Then he gets hurt in 2023 and 2024. So I walked in after what happened in 2023 going into this year of 2024, and I'm saying he's got to deliver. He's got to step up. And then when he suffers another injury and then a rupture the Achilles already on topic of doing so the first one, I walked away at the end of the season. And even when he ruptured his Achilles the first time in this 2024 season, I said, that's it for him. You got to just rip off the Band-Aid. You own the money anyway. And this is it. He'll never start another meaningful game for the Cleveland Browns.
I thought a similar thing in the sense that, like, they probably should, but with the amount of guaranteed money he was owed, it's just the cap hit is $80 million in 2026. Like, there's not much you can do about that. The dead cap number this year is 167, and it's 167 million, and then 131 million dead cap in 2026. So, like, you can't build a team if you have that kind of money locked into a player who's not even playing.
You can, and here's why.
If you draft a rookie quarterback.
If you draft Shedeur Sanders at second overall, or now, I know the Falcons want Kirk Cousins to get traded here. If I was Kirk Cousins, and I know this may not be in his nature, I would run the James Harden playbook. I would start to be a malcontent in that locker room. And maybe that starts off in OTAs or mini camps and things like that, but that's starting to start up. And I would be such a royal pain in the ass, and I don't think that's in his nature.
It's not.
So the Falcons have no choice but to release you. And then you do the Russell Wilson plan in Pittsburgh where you basically sign a veteran deal. Like, that's what's on the table. You're not wrong. The Cleveland Browns either have to draft a quarterback or two, or they got to cheap out on a quarterback here and just get a bargain. But there is no more of a point. You got to move forward. You can't look back. To me, there's no more of a point of playing Deshaun Watson. I'll take it even a step further. Why would any other team bring him in? Like, Mike, you don't think another team's going to bring him in, right?
No, and not only do I not think another team's going to bring him in, it's kind of like the Tebow effect. Unless he's going to be your starter and be the guy, there's no point in bringing that drama into it. It was almost like the Kaepernick thing to an extent as well.
And at least Tebow's a good guy. Deshaun Watson's a jerk.
For sure, but like if... We've seen this in the NFL a million times. Mm-hmm. If you're good enough, it doesn't matter.
You get a chance.
Yeah. If you're a terrible person, but you're a good player, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, if you're a backup quarterback who's a terrible person, who's not playing
well, point.
It's not worth it. But if a team thinks he could be the starter, then maybe. But I don't think that's going to happen anymore. It's so crazy to think that Deshaun Watson, in my mind, I think his career is over.
All righty, Brian Geltzeiler is going to join us next. He's going to react to this entire situation in Denver, now standing by with the latest sports flash. Here he is, Rich Ackerman. All righty, welcome back in, and this is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam, just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. It has been a stunning NBA season, really, from the Luka Doncic trade, which I still can't believe, to the Los Angeles Lakers from the Mavericks, and then on. Just a little while back, Taylor Jenkins got fired for the Memphis Grizzlies, but with three regular season games left for the Denver Nuggets, who right now are the fourth seed in the Western Conference, they have fired not only their head coach in Michael Malone, but also Calvin Booth today, which is just wild, wild stuff. So let's try to make some sense of this entire situation. We bring in Brian Geltzeiler, who does a great job on SiriusXM NBA Radio, also a contributor at NBA TV, has covered the NBA for a long time, and he's kind enough to join us right now. Brian, appreciate the time. How you been, my man?
I'm good, Zach. Pleasure to be with you, buddy.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. So what was your reaction when you saw this news a little while ago that not only Michael Malone was getting fired by the Nuggets, but also their GM in Calvin Booth?
Well, it was interesting. When seeing Malone get fired, I was obviously, with three games left in a regular season, see a championship coach on a championship contender lose his job was utterly shocking to me. With all that said, it wouldn't have been shocking to me if it happened in the offseason, because the Malone-Calvin Booth relationship has been god-awful for this entire season. It's one of the worst-kept secrets in NBA circles. You know, Malone is not happy with how Calvin Booth has used draft picks for Denver, because they're a team that's not going to go into the second apron. They have an ownership group that's very conscious of paying too much money in luxury tax. They want their player costs to commensurate with their revenue, and they don't want this to be a losing proposition. And there's been a lot of criticism in NBA circles about that ownership group not committing more money in this Jokic era to doing what they have to do. But when you are not going to go deep into the tax, what you do draft-wise, the cost-control talent that you bring in is going to be really important. And Bruce Brown and Jeff Green left 2 years ago from that championship team. They didn't bring Kentavious Caldwell-Pope back. And outside of Christian Brown, they haven't really replaced the guys they lost all that adequately. And guys like Julian Strother and Peyton Watson have not played in the way Michael Malone needs them to play for them to be bench contributors on this team. Even Zeke Nagy, who Booth liked a lot, they paid him a contract, he didn't play a lot, he's not very good. Like, they just, the problem with Denver is they don't have more than six guys that they can use, and Malone is angry at Booth for it, and Booth is angry at Malone because he doesn't feel like he spent enough time developing the Watsons and the Strothers. So there's a big disconnect there, and obviously Josh Kroenke today got sick of it all and said, you know, ripping a band-aid off, I don't want to deal with this stuff going into the playoffs, the two of you guys are gone. Very important to note, David Adelman, son of former NBA coach Rick Adelman, highly, highly respected. The people I spoke to today think he can do a fantastic job stepping right in there because of the experience that he has, the relationships that he has, the reputation that he has. Very, very different than what Memphis did with Tomas Asalo, who doesn't have experience like that, doesn't really have an NBA resume. This is different. David Adelman does have an NBA resume, and there is confidence, I've heard, within the Nuggets organization that they can win with him.
So just on Thursday or Friday of last week, one of my producers, Stu, asked me, you know, rank the teams 1 through 3 in the Western Conference on you feeling who has the best chance to get to the NBA Finals. And I said, 1, Oklahoma City, even with their struggles as of late. I said, 2, Denver. And then I ended up putting the Warriors 3. So, you know, I still had a high view of the Nuggets, even with them being 10-13 in their last 23 games. With all that being said, though, my response to you would just be this when you look at them moving forward. Is there a hope for this group, even with what you just said about the interim coach, right, sliding over to become the head coach? Because I look at the news today and I say, at most, as far as this team could go, is probably the second round now.
Listen, they're still hopeful they can go to the finals and win a title. If they didn't think they would not have made this move. This is different. Memphis understood they weren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Memphis understood with Asalo, he's going to be the permanent guy anyway. They understood this was generally a lost season and rip the band-aid off and get rid of Jenkins. Now, I didn't agree with it, and I would have fired Jenkins last offseason when they stripped him of 5 assistant coaches. But in this situation, they do believe in Adelman. I think one thing's very important to note here, Zach, how terrible Denver's defense has been lately. And I think there's an impression in that ownership group that Michael Malone has publicly trashed his players way too many times, and that there's a thought that he's lost this team and lost this locker room because of the level of public criticism. And it's interesting, last week in postgame, there was a very off-the-cuff comment that Michael Porter Jr. had made along the lines of saying, hey, you know, and it was somewhat matter-of-fact in the way he said it, if we don't go far this year, they're breaking this group up. And I think that's kind of where Denver is here, is that this is going to be, if they don't go to the finals this year, they're looking to potentially do a reload around Nikola Jokic for the second half of his career. And I think they started this now with the understanding that Mike Malone had worn out his welcome with these players. They were not playing hard for him anymore. That the ownership group tired of this Booth Malone back and forth thing, and that the two of them did not like each other, were not working cooperatively well with one another, and both thought maybe it'd be nice if the other one was out of a job so they didn't have to work with him anymore. And in the end, the Kroenkes, you know, listen, they shot first and asked questions later. They got rid of these guys and said, you know what, we're not tolerating this in our organization. They for them to do this, I will say this, they have to feel like Adelman gave them a better shot to go win a title this year than Michael Malone. And that doesn't speak as much to the Malone-Booth relationship as it speaks to the Malone relationship with his players. One important thing is to note here. I don't believe that Denver checked with Nikola Jokic before they fired Malone, but I am damn positive they checked with Nikola Jokic before they promoted David Adelman. And I would believe that David Adelman has Nikola Jokic's seal of approval to step in and take over as head coach.
What was Nikola Jokic's relationship like with Mike Malone?
Excellent. Always was excellent. Was never an issue. Jokic loved Malone, and Malone was very supportive of Jokic always. And as a matter of fact, when people would try to take shots at Jokic for some of his defensive shortcomings, Michael Malone, who trashed everybody's defense, was the first one to step up and defend him on that end of the floor and actually blame others for some of his shortcomings. So that was a super relationship to my understanding. And that Jokic really liked Malone a lot. The two of them had a nice relationship. But again, this is the NBA, Zach. Coaches are hired to be fired. It's unfortunate. It's how it works. But if your name is not Popovich or Spoelstra or Kerr, you are susceptible to being fired, no matter what a good job you do. What's very interesting here, and I tweeted this out about 10 minutes before ESPN tweeted this out today, 4 of the last 6 coaches to win an NBA championship have been fired now. Okay, we go back and we look. Nick Nurse, Frank Vogel, Mike Budenholzer, and now Michael Malone. This is the landscape in the NBA. And what's happening is you have a lot of executives in the second apron era that are being punished for bad contracts they've signed. These executives are under fire. In many cases, the move of the executive is go ahead and fire the coach. It saves me a little bit of time. Here, Calvin Booth hadn't built up enough capital with the Kroenkes to be able to fire Michael Malone on his own. So they got rid of them both together. One element here that's important to note with the Kroenkes, okay? And executives and head coaches are being paid ridiculous amounts of money right now in the NBA. They let Tim Connelly go to Minnesota because they didn't want to give him the amount of money that Minnesota's new ownership group, Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez, were willing to pay Connelly to bring him over. And I think this Denver little mini dynasty that they've had that's kind of unwinding on this, and that's, listen, a finals appearance in 20, a championship in 23, I think that's unwinding on them a lot of reasons because they were penny wise and pound foolish. Spend on the executive, even if you don't want to go in the tax. You need somebody really good at their job. They let a guy really good at his job go to another organization that, by the way, has their own financial challenges, but still finding a way to thrive under that.
Could you see Brian Geltzeiler, and I know Nikola Jokic, we don't know much about him, even though he's the best player in the NBA, and he's a different kind of superstar. Could you see him maybe around the corner or not that far away saying, I'm done with this messy situation in Denver, I want out?
I don't think it's his style. I think he likes where he lives. He's a comfort creature. He enjoys Denver and that Colorado area. He likes to go home over the summer. He's very comfortable where he is. I don't see him asking for a trade. I just don't think that's in his DNA. Now, listen, they could break this whole thing down around him and have it be ugly and him decide maybe I do want to go move somewhere. I'd be really surprised, though. I don't think that's Jokic's style. I think for right now, he wants to see what they do, who they bring in. I'm sure he'll have a little bit of input on some of that. But I'll also say this, Zach, I don't know how much input he wants. He wants to do his job. He wants to play as well as he can play. The guy's as competitive can be. But when it's time to be done doing his job, he wants to go back to Serbia and ride his horses. He wants to have a good time. He likes to gamble. He likes to drink. Like, he's just a fun dude. And I think for him, he doesn't want to have his hands in all this stuff. And I don't even think he cares about perception. I just don't think it's not his job. And he doesn't want to deal with it if it's not his job. So I'd be really surprised if Jokic turns around and says, hey, I want out of here. I think we may see some other stars this summer asking, yeah, Giannis Antetokounmpo being one of them. Ooh. I don't think Nikola Jokic is going to be that guy.
You think so, that the Giannis relationship with the Bucks? I know this has been talked about for years, and I've been a big supporter of keeping Giannis in Milwaukee. You think that's coming to an end?
I do. I will tell you that, knowing what I know about Giannis and his desire to win, knowing how the Bucks are completely bereft of assets, and by the way, one of the reasons they are is because Giannis has stepped on their heads and made threats to them in the past. And once a guy makes those threats, that's out there. Milwaukee's bad. And I say they're bad. Giannis is an excellent player, one of the best in the league, second or third best player in the league right now, and is having an amazing, amazing MVP caliber type of year. He will land on my ballot. He won't be the MVP, but he'll land on my ballot on a bad team. And I say they're a bad team. They're in the 5 seed in the conference, but that's how good Giannis is. There's literally nothing around him, and they don't have assets to make moves. And really, quite frankly, if you're the Bucks and you can't win right now with Giannis, your best move is to trade Giannis to reload, because he's going to get you a ton as a launching pad for a rebuild. That's your best bet, because there's literally no one else on this team right now that has any trade value whatsoever.
First guess, where do you think Giannis is then playing then next year?
Houston. I think it's the one guy that Houston would break up the core for. I don't think Houston breaks up the core for Durant. I think one of the reasons they went and they got the Phoenix picks from the Nets was if Phoenix wants to trade Booker. But I think Matt Ishbia is too hard-headed to want to do that. I think he's going to try to see if he can, you know, retool this thing around Booker. I don't think they'll be successful in it. But I think for Houston, they're watching to see what OKC does with keeping the whole thing together and all the young guys. But I do think if Giannis is put in front of them, I think it's way too tempting to not bring him in. And they're the one team that has every piece Milwaukee could want, including a whole ton of picks.
I literally have 70 seconds. Just explain this to me, Brian Geltzeiler. I know the relationship was ugly between Malone and Calvin Booth. Why not just pick one or the other and then reevaluate it at the end of the season?
Because I think the Kroenkes were disgusted. I think they see blame on both sides. I think they see Malone not being willing to commit to young guys and give them what's an appropriate opportunity. And I think they see Booth as a guy who didn't really draft guys that were rotation ready when they needed rotation ready players, and wants to point his finger at the head coach for not developing them well and not giving them a chance. And I think what happened here is that both sides kept chirping to the owner, and the owner had enough. And from that, and by the way, I don't know that they, to your point, that they fire Malone if they don't have David Adaman waiting in the wings, who is a very, very viable head coaching candidate in the NBA. Again, widely respected, and a guy that is thought as a head coach candidate. It's going to be a very, very good coach.
You can follow him on Twitter at BGeltNBA. Brian Geltzeiler, host of SiriusXM NBA Radio, also contributor to NBA TV. Brian, great to have you on. Really appreciate the insight.
Zach, my pleasure, buddy. Hope to do it again soon. You take care.
You got it, 100%. With the playoffs right around the corner, usually we're not talking about coaches getting fired, but here we are. We'll definitely have Brian back on when the postseason does start back up. But geez, there are stunning stories in the NBA this season. And you look at what happened with Luka Doncic getting traded. That was the most stunning story. But after that, even with knowing, right, like as Brian does, that the relationship was ugly between Michael Malone and Calvin Booth, one of them getting fired with 3 games left of the regular season is something. Both of them getting fired is absolutely shocking. So, my oh my, what a story that was. We'll react to that on the other side. We'll also get to a news brief coming up in 25 minutes. This is the Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanses and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.